Good morning. It's time to start, but I'll give you a minute because some of the lesson sheets for today weren't available last Sunday. So if you don't have the lesson for today, which is Michael, David's first wife, they are now in the back on the table. So if you haven't gotten one of those yet, and also while you're at it, next Sunday's lesson about Abigail is also back there. So whether or not you had the lesson sheet, you did have, hopefully, the schedule for this quarter, which showed the text for today and the topic. So we're going to continue our study on the influence of a woman. And, you know, we're noticing different, so far, Old Testament stories about women and how they use their influence. We're noticing how powerful the influence of a woman could be. And last week's story was kind of a feel-good story. We talked about Ruth and Naomi and Boaz, and their influence there was quite powerful and used for some godly purpose. That's not what we're doing this morning. This morning's story is not a feel-good story. And actually, if you look at today's lesson and the next two, there'll be, in total, three of King David's wives. And David does not come off looking good in any of these three lessons. It's said that he was a man after God's own heart in the Bible, and he was noted for that. At the same time, David has some faults that were quite dramatic, and his treatment of women was often very poor. And so how they influenced him is what we'll be noticing. And this lesson, what we do notice today, I'd like you to keep in your mind, we're going to contrast Michael's life and influence with Bathsheba, which will be in 2 weeks. So, okay, all that being said, we're picking up the story today. The period of the judges is over, and now we're in the time of kings. Notably, this is King Saul, the first king of Judah, Israel, combined God's kingdom. So by the time we get to the text for today, which is 1 Samuel chapter 18, like I said, what we'll do is we'll go through and we'll just note all the facts, all the key elements to the story before we get to the questions. David is a servant of Saul at this time. Saul has already been told by God that he is going to be replaced because of his disobedience. So Saul knows this is going to happen. By the time we get to today's lesson, that's already occurred. Now, David has already killed Goliath and is now famous for his action of bravery and faith. And Saul is aware of David's fame, and it bothers Saul. He's paranoid about David taking over. So Saul's turned against David, and already at this point in the story has tried to kill David, which it's a very strange relationship. If you go back and read this time in the life of Saul and David, because David is clearly God's servant, but he's also Saul's servant. He's trying to be Saul's servant. And Saul loves David at times, kind of like, in today's lifestyle. I mean, David's employee of the month. You know, David's a great, great worker. And then the next month, the employer is trying to kill him. And then the next month again, he's employee of the month again. It's just really weird, weird situation. Because David's in Saul's presence, trying to do what Saul wants, and then Saul will get angry and turn against him and by his own hand try to kill him. And then he promotes David again, and then there's these conspiracy theories that Paul is developing to kill David. So it's just a really unusual situation. But we find here in verse 20 of chapter 18, our text is going to start. And in this verse alone, it kind of lays out what's about to happen. Now Michal, Saul's daughter, loved David. And when they told Saul, the thing was agreeable to him. So we have no backstory, once again, on Michal and David. This is not a novel. We don't know the relationship between the two, other than Michael loved David. We don't know what the love was based on. Was she caught up in this fame that David had because she was a young girl and David was a young man and he was famous and all the girls would sing songs to David about he's killed his thousands of Philistines? Was it just in kind of infatuation? Was there a long relationship here because she was Jonathan's little sister? Perhaps David had known her for a while. We know nothing about this relationship until we get to verse 20, and Michael loves David. So what's Saul's reaction when he finds this out? Well, why? He's pleased. Why? Okay, he wants to trick David into being his son-in-law with the ultimate goal of having David killed. Right? Okay. So is Saul using his daughter in this situation? I think we all would all agree Michael's being used here. So what if Saul's plan plays out exactly as he wants, and as a result of this engagement, David were to be killed by the Philistines, which is what he's aiming for here? Did he take into consideration Michael's feelings? And what would we expect Michael to feel like if that were to work out? She'd be devastated. It seems like Saul is not concerned at all with Michael. He is focused on getting to David, and so he's using his daughter, Michael. What's David's reaction to this situation, this proposal, this potential marriage? How does David react? Okay, David's against it at first. Okay. Okay, this happened once before where David had the opportunity to marry Saul's daughter. That one didn't play out, partly because David didn't feel like, from his humble origins, he should be marrying into the king's family. That didn't happen. So how does Saul get past that this time? A dowry, right? Okay. Right, so it's going to really, I think Saul plans on killing two birds with one stone here. The problem with David is he doesn't feel like he could properly buy into this relationship. He doesn't have the stature, the standing in society to marry into the king's family. But Saul says, but you can buy her with 100 foreskins of the Philistines. So a couple things. One is that puts David in a dangerous situation, which is what Saul wants. But also, David is now has an avenue here to get into this relationship that he feels like is something he could do. Okay, so is David enthusiastic about this challenge of 100 Philistines? Yeah. How do we know? He kills 200. Okay, so he goes through with this. He was told to bring 100. He brings 200, and he doesn't get killed in the process. So Saul does not. It doesn't work out the way Saul had hoped, and he gives Michael to David with the understanding that what's going to happen moving forward in this relationship on Saul's perspective. Yeah, Saul's still planning on using Michael against David. It didn't work out where the Philistines kill him, but it says that Saul has the expectation that he will use Michael to get David. Okay. So that's kind of the background for this relationship. Is that a good, healthy relationship from the start? When the family members are behind the scenes in a young marriage with their own agendas, that's not going to work out well. And we'll see it here more blatantly than maybe we would see normally in a marriage relationship. And that's one thing that's going on here that we needed to notice. Okay. And also, I wanted to point out, David, he's enthusiastic about joining this. But if you look at the text, it doesn't say that he did all this because he loved Michael in return. What we keep seeing come up is, it says, it pleased David to become the king's son-in-law. So there's no text evidence here that says David had any feelings for Michal, although he may have. It doesn't say that. It's always focused in verse 27 and 28 about David, no, 26 and 27, David wanting to be the king's son-in-law. So David has got things going on in his head beyond Michal as well. So we don't know if David's using Michal at this point. We may know more later in the story. But right now it's interesting to note that it says it pleased David to be the king's son-in-law. Not that it pleased David to marry Michal. So there's a little bit of speculation there, but I think it'll play out. Okay, as the story progresses, chapter 19, verse 11, we have an incident when Saul has had enough of David and decides, I'm just going to send my servants to get David, to bring him to me. I'm just going to kill him right here and be done with it. Well, Michal finds out about this plot, and she tells David, she warns David that they're coming to get you, to kill you. She lets him down through a back window to make sure he gets away. She puts this statue in the bed with some goat skins on the head. She puts the covers up to disguise as if David is actually in the bed. When the servants of Saul arrive, she tells them David's sick. He can't be disturbed. So servants go back to tell Saul David's not available. He's sick. Saul says, go bring him anyway. I'm going to kill him. Just bring him. So they go back and they discover David's not at home. This has been a trick. Now, as far as we know, this is the last time David and Michal will see each other for a very long time. Because from this point forward, David goes into the wilderness. He's going to be on the run. He goes from here to see Samuel to get assistance on what he's going to do. Jonathan provides some assistance. But David is no longer at home. He is going to be on the run for years. Okay, until this problem with Saul plays out. Okay, so that was the text. We're not going to read that. Hopefully you had a chance to go through what Michal does for David in this portion of the story. Any comments, questions so far about the story as it's been revealed? Okay. While David is in the wilderness, he takes at least two more wives. We're aware of. There's two. It's interesting that in chapter 25, verse 44, part of the text you were given, Michal is given to another man by her father in marriage. And this is 25, verse 44. Now Saul had given Michal, his daughter, David's wife, to Paltai, the son of Lash, who was from Galliam. So Michal has been given to somebody else at this point. Is that her decision? What's happened here that you can tell from the text, Julie? Who gave her?
Saul.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it doesn't sound like Michal has made any decisions here. It sounds like Saul is continuing to use his daughter for political reasons, and he just gives her to somebody else. We know no more than that so far. You know, in these movies we watch today, these love story movies, The Last of the Mohicans or The Princess Bride, you know, the hero says, I'll always come for you. You know, just stay alive. I'll come and get you. Well, there's no evidence that David makes any attempt to go and get Michal. He has wives with him in the wilderness. He doesn't go after Michal. We don't know why. Perhaps he did, and it's not revealed. But based on what we find revealed later, it doesn't seem like David is motivated to go and restore his wife to him, which is also interesting. It's part, perhaps, of Michael's behaviors later. Comments on that? Anyone want to disagree with how I've laid this out so far? Yes. Okay. Okay. Yeah, it is. So what my mom is pointing out is that so far the only love we've seen in the story is that Michael loved David. And she's acted so far in a way that shows she did love him. She saved his life. She turned on her father in order to do that. And so far we haven't seen love in any other direction. Just Michael loved David. Julie? Right. He did. David did want her, and he went and he killed 200 Philistines instead of 100. So that's true. Okay. All right. So let's keep moving in the story. Saul, of course, eventually dies in battle. Now, when this happens, David receives his kingship, but it's not all 12 tribes. David gets Judah and Benjamin, I think. We typically consider the lower kingdom. David gets just a portion of the 12 tribes. And Ish-bosheth, I guess you pronounce it that way, Saul's son, takes Israel as his kingdom. So there's this period of civil war between David and Saul's son, two separate kingdoms who are fighting battles. There's two separate armies. There's a lot of military leaders on both sides that we get to know that are involved in this civil war. At some point, though, let's go ahead while we're in this part of the story. Go to 2 Samuel chapter 3. We'll pick up the story there. 2 Samuel chapter 3, verse 1, just to paint the picture. Now there was a long war between the house of Saul and the house of David. And David grew steadily stronger, but the house of Saul grew weaker continually. Okay, so it's at this point, as Saul's house is getting weaker, there is a military commander for Ish-bosheth named Abner. And Abner sees that Saul's house is getting weaker, and Abner is very politically astute. And so Abner reaches out to David and tells David, I will deliver to you the other tribes so that you will have rule over all 12 tribes. David is agreeable to this and has one condition, and let's read that still in 2 Samuel 3, starting in verse 12. Let's pick up in verse 13. And this is David talking. And he said, good, I will make a covenant with you, but I demand one thing of you, namely, you shall not see my face unless you first bring Michal, Saul's daughter, when you come to see me. So David sent messengers to Ish-bosheth, Saul's son, saying, give me my wife Michal, to whom I was betrothed, for 100 foreskins of the Philistines. And Ish-bosheth sent and took her from her husband, from Paltiel, this time reads differently in my account, the son of Laish. But her husband went with her, weeping as he went, and followed her as far as Bethurim. Then Abner said to him, go, return. So he returned. Okay, so finally, years later, and based on all the events that have occurred here, it's about 10 years after David had married Michal that he sends for her. But by now, of course, she's married to somebody else. So this poor guy, this husband, can do nothing to stop this. But what he does do, he just goes along with this procession, weeping the whole way, until Abner finally has had enough, and Abner forces him to return home. Okay. So Michal was married to David. She lost her husband because her father was trying to kill him. So David leaves her, doesn't come for her. Her father gives her to another man to marry. She's married for some period of time. And then David, although by now has multiple wives, and he's coming into his full kingdom, sends for her, and her devoted husband is then sent back home. And she is now going to be David's wife again. Do I have that right? Is that accurate based on what everyone's understanding is so far? Okay. How do you think Michal feels about the situation at this moment? Speculate a little bit. What is Michal feeling?
It's a sweeping disaster.
Okay, so Glenn points out that the weeping and sadness is from the husband. It doesn't say anything about Michael, Ricardo? She might feel like a pawn. Is she a pawn?
Yes.
Why does David want Michael at this point? Why at this point, after all these years, and he's got other wives, mind you, why does he want Michael now? Political. Okay. I think that's true, but can you explain why that's political? What the advantage of this would be? Yeah, I think to further cement his role as the new king, as politics worked back then, by being married to the previous king's daughter, that gave you further claim to the kingship. So it seems like this is just another one of those old world political maneuvers where you gave daughters in marriage based on how that was going to play out with future kingships. And it seems like David here, it looks like to me, he could have gone and found her in previous times. He waits till now when he needs the political ammunition to claim full kingship of all 12 tribes to go and get her. Anyone want to disagree with that? Or just bring out another point that maybe potentially playing out here? I'm sure Michael understood that. So if she's been used previously, is she being used here as well? It certainly looks that way. It looks like she is a victim in all this, and she just keeps getting kicked around. She's being used so far, from what I can tell, throughout this story. Okay? Has she done anything wrong so far that we're aware of? Okay. Nothing so far that looks like she's a bad actor in this. Okay. All right. So finally now, we get to the event that we're going to answer the questions on. This is 2 Samuel chapter 6. So in verse 12, the text is going to start, and I'll summarize just so we have time to discuss. And you have the readings. Hopefully you've read through this. If you recall, at this time, the Ark of the Covenant was not in Jerusalem. It wasn't in David's possession. There had been a lot of problems keeping the Ark safely. And those who had it, some were afflicted, and then some were blessed to have this Ark of the Covenant in their household. David thought it was important that he go and get it as God's anointed king. This important object was in David's possession. So he's finally at a point where he is ready to go and receive it. And he's very joyous as it's finally happening. He's got this procession. He's bringing the Ark back to Jerusalem, to the city of David, as it's called now. And as it's coming in, there's music, and he's dancing. He's very enthusiastic, very pleased to have this happen. But as he does, Michael is watching from the palace. And verse 16 says, "Then it happened, as the ark of the Lord came into the city of David, that Michael, the daughter of Saul, looked out of the window and saw King David leaping and dancing before the Lord. And she despised him in her heart." And there's so many things to speculate about here. But as far as the text reveals, this is the first time we've seen Michael in action since she came back to David. There's nothing else about conversations they've had, what life has been like for her back in David's household. We know nothing until this point. And she sees David coming, and this is a joyous moment for David and for David's servants. They're excited about this. And she looks at him and she despised him in her heart. Was it the dancing that was bothering her, do you think?
I think she was upset about the daughter and she wanted her husband to act like a king.
Okay, so there's that piece of it here where what she says to him, let's go ahead and read that, because Julie's on to a good point here. And they brought, this is verse 17, and they brought in the ark of the Lord and set it in its place inside the tent which David had pitched for it. And David offered burnt offerings and peace offerings before the Lord. And when David had finished offering the burnt offerings and the peace offering, he blessed the people in the name of the Lord of hosts. And he distributes some prizes for them. Verse 20, but when David returned to bless his household, Michal, the daughter of Saul, came out to meet David and said, how the king of Israel distinguished himself today. He uncovered himself today in the eyes of his servants' maids as one of the foolish ones shamelessly uncovers himself. Okay, so just that far. Julie mentions he's not acting kingly here. So it could be that his behavior is what sparked her statement here. Because what is she doing in her couple sentences here? What is she saying that he's done? What's her complaint? Not acting kingly. She didn't say it that way, but you have uncovered yourself in front of your servants. What else? As one of the foolish ones shamelessly uncovers himself. And she starts off, the first thing she says, how the king of Israel distinguished himself today. In her eyes, had he distinguished himself? Sarcasm. Okay. So sarcasm is a method of influence. Because this is what we're going to talk about this morning for a moment, about how influence can be used. She starts off with sarcasm, and then she gets on to the truth of the matter, where she was embarrassed of his behavior, his uncovering himself. Okay? But how did David respond? Verse 21. So David said to Michal, it was before the Lord who chose me above your father and above all his house to appoint me ruler over the people of the Lord, over Israel. So he's obviously offended by her comments and gonna, looks like to me, one up her insult by saying, God chose me over your father and over your father's household. This is escalating very quickly, because I think this is escalation, what he's done here. He could have tried to diffuse the situation. We talked about a gentle answer turns away anger. That is not David's specialty. We're going to see this about David. He's not the kind of person who can take a harsh criticism and have a gentle answer and get somewhere productive from that. He escalates here. So he didn't at all care for her criticism or the way she presented it. He says further, therefore I will celebrate before the Lord, and I will be more lightly esteemed than this, and will be humble in my own eyes, but with the maids of whom you have spoken, with them I will be distinguished. And Michal, the daughter of Saul, had no children to the day of her death. That's it. That's all we get about this interaction. We don't read of her anymore beyond this. Okay. So we have about 15 minutes to go through the worksheet. There's a lot could be said here, and there is speculation, as there always is when we look at these. I wanted us to consider the full story as we have it in the Bible, because all this background plays into this conversation that happens at the end. Okay, and like I said, David to me doesn't come out looking good here. And we'll see some more of that in the coming weeks. Okay, so on to the chart. The first box, relationship with the influenced individual. Well, what is the relationship? A husband and wife. Okay? So that's an easy one. Was the relationship between the two short term or long term? Long term. Overall results, and when I say overall results, positive or negative, we're talking about 2 Samuel 6, 12 through 23. Was the result of this last conversation positive or negative? Negative. I think we'd all agree to that. Okay, what was her method? Assuming Michal was trying to influence David here, And when we talk to people, we're always trying to influence them. What was her method here?
Sarcasm.
Okay. I got that one down. What else? Anything else?
Reproach.
Good. Okay. Could you say criticism? I mean, did she potentially have a criticism that would have been helpful to him? Possibly. I mean, there's something here that maybe David didn't fully consider in his behavior. She didn't think he was behaving appropriately. So I think she wanted to criticize, and it was more insulting and sarcastic. Okay, she despised him already. Does that affect your ability to be influential with somebody? Certainly it does. So it could have been because she despised him in her heart. Her only objective here was to cause him some pain. Is that possible? Do we do that sometimes? Yeah, we do. Rob, do you have a comment? Right? Right? Well, I mean, she may have had comments to Saul about it, and we don't know. I mean, she wouldn't have had any authority, certainly, to criticize her father. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay. And it's certainly probably more difficult to be influential with your father. Well, maybe not. We talk about some methods sometimes that daughters can use on their fathers, but it's not going to be criticism, perhaps, is the best method. Okay. Other comments? Yeah. This whole situation that's played out so far, I think has made, this is my speculation, has made Michael so bitter towards men, and especially towards David, that she's going to find it very difficult to be influential. Her bitterness is going to be probably the most prominent thing that comes out of her when she communicates with David. Well, yeah, so that's a good point, and that brings up that last little sentence that's interesting, is that she had no children going forward. So was the way it's presented here and the way it falls into the text, is it indicating that because of this interaction, they're no longer going to have any intimacy? Is that what you're taking from this? Okay, and Tia thinks she's barren. Okay, Julie? Put her away. Okay, David just said, okay, you know, I'm going to quit interacting with you entirely. Anybody else? Yeah, it could be that God closed your womb, but typically it would say that, because we have that language throughout where God closes her womb. It just says here, instead, and that's possible, but it says here that she had no children at the day of her death. I think this interaction was just so unpleasant that they just didn't have anything to do with each other anymore. And that's speculation. But that's what I think has happened here. That's right. Yep. Right. Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's keep going. And so we talked about the method of influence. What was the impact of the influence? Was she influential with David in this situation? No. It had no influence other than it made him mad. She was not influential. Now, did it start that way when they were a young married couple? No. It seems like they were a regular young married couple. They started out fine. And things went so badly throughout their marriage that at this point, she's not influential at all. Was the influence a result of a conscious effort? Right, it's very hard to tell here. She's obviously bitter and she despised David, so it may just be a chance to dig at him. And if she was trying to influence his behavior, it wasn't effective at all. Was the instance part of a larger pattern of influence? We don't really have a lot of interaction between the two. From the time she sneaks David out of the window till now, we just don't have any information. Was David aware of the effort to influence him? Well, certainly, she comes up right to him when he comes in. David's happy. He comes to the house to bless his household, and she greets him with this. So he was aware of her criticism. If it was influence, an attempt to influence, it's hard to say. Would David have been better off or worse off without the influence? Considering that she was not influential, it really didn't affect his behavior, I don't think. I don't think David changed at all based on this interaction. So I don't think this really counts as aware of the influence because there wasn't any. So here's another speculation. What would have been the result of the situation without the influence? How would it have played out if she didn't greet him at the door with this criticism, sarcasm? You think perhaps they would have eventually reconciled and they might have had a marriage where she had children? Quite possible. You know, it's so hard to understand these relationships. David had numerous wives at this point. And that's not what God intended when he set up marriage. And we've talked about this before. This multiple wives, while it happened in the Old Testament, it was not what God had planned when he set up marriage. And the problems it creates, it seems like insurmountable, some of these instances. This one is one, you know, when she's been left, she's got other wives now, and she gets pulled back into this, it would have been hard for her, I think, to establish intimacy anyway, unless it was forced, which we'll see later. David is not beyond forcing women to be intimate with him. That's going to be something that David does. Raul? Not. Okay. So that's. That may be. And at the same time, you wonder, well, why even call for her at all then? You know, if you were going to put her away and she was no longer clean as a wife, essentially, David could have left her where she was. So he, you're right, that may be an important reason, but then again, you wonder, why put her through this? Or why not even, the text doesn't indicate David reached out to her to find out, did she want to come back? from what he says to Abner, just go get her and bring her here. It seems to me that David was continuing this pattern of using Michal for their own purposes, just like her father did. Okay. Well, yes. Yeah, so Saul may have been influential to David in how he ran his household, but you would hope that he would be more loving, you know, than Saul would have been. Well, absolutely. That's true. It was. It was trying to tie those northern kingdoms back into him. Okay. So real quick, let's do... Anyone have a takeaway from this sad, sad story? A takeaway aside that men can be jerks. Okay. Okay. Biting our tongue until anger subsides. All right. Okay. Careful how you speak to your mate. That's always true. Yeah, because you lose influence sometimes if you start out with a sarcasm or an insult. That's certainly true. Ralph? We act out. Okay. I would think not. With a house full of wives and concubines, she would get very little attention. That's true. Okay. So something else, and remember, I put this material together initially for young people. And I've been through this material with the high school and the young adults so far. So one thing I wanted to point out for them as a takeaway is marriage can start, you know, just great. You know, Michal loved David. And they were young and married, and David had this potential, and she had this pedigree of the king's daughter, and it just totally falls apart. And at the end, we find that she has no influence with him at all. And what led up to that, part of it was the parental involvement in the marriage. I mean, Saul was trying to pull strings between these two, and it created a horrible situation that just perpetuated. So, young people, I guess not me anymore, but young people need to be aware that a marriage, you know, it needs to be between a husband and wife, and you need to try to eliminate outside pressures. We can't get rid of our families, and our families are going to have influence over us, but you can't let that poison the marriage. And we don't know really to what extent Saul poisoned this, but certainly it's something to consider. Ellie? No. Yeah. David certainly is not a good husband in this situation. And there's no evidence that he ever demonstrated any love or tenderness to her. One more thing before we go. There's Michael's a sad story. I think she's a victim in all this. And she let her bitterness from her life affect everything she saw. By the time David is bringing the Ark of the Covenant, she is so bitter, she has no joy, it seems like, at all from this moment. David may have handled it poorly, But this is a time for the nation to celebrate. And she's just focused on the bitterness. And Hebrews 12, and it's Hebrews 12, 14 and 15 speak about that. And we're out of time. But take a look at that. It talks about how we need to be aware that we're supposed to live at peace with all men, and we can't let our bitterness prevent us from doing good or seeing the good. Okay? And I think, as sad as Michael's story is, that's where she was. She was so bitter she couldn't get past it. Sandy? No. Yeah, we can get a lot of good by looking at David's life. He did things well. He was a godly man, and yet he had these flaws that occurred, and he had to set those right. And to the extent that it affected Michael, we don't know. And we'll look at Bathsheba and Nathan in 2 weeks. That's another good one. Okay, thank you guys.